let's show success. All for one and one for all. Unity means solidarity. Yeah. United we stand. Divided we fall.
Hello out there, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another fabulous and exciting and various other nice adjectives edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. A very special guest for you today, ladies and gentlemen. Some of you have been stockpiling gold, silver, and some of you have been challenging the banks in their validity of, you know, basically making money up out of thin air to loan to you so that they can steal real assets when you default on those loans. Anybody who's taken a loan from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac can probably vouch for that. I have a very special guest for you today, ladies and gentlemen, who is a specialist in banking, gold, and just being a generally good bloke. His name is Graham, and he's from goldnow.com, I believe. Graham, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Vinny. It's goldnow.st, not com.
Right. So give us your full name and a little bit of background about yourself for myself, obviously, and the listeners too.
Sure. My name's Graham Kelly, and I started my business in Australia in 1999. And I just how I started my business was interesting. I had a bill from the local bank here in Australia, and I was working long hours and making a lot of money working for a big telephony company, and I was sick and tired of working for them, but I couldn't leave. I was locked in because of the high wages they paid me. And to cut a long story short, I got home one Saturday afternoon, and all the kids were at the movies with their mother, and I was missing out. And I opened the mail, and I got a bill from the bank, and they billed me a large amount of money for a mediocre service. So I thought, oh, I can do better than that. So I actually set up a website. It took me 15 minutes and declared to all and sundry that I was now a bank. And that was okay. That was my little rebellion, you know, against the system. But the biggest shock came the next morning. I had 14 customers. I had new customers, 14 of them. So it was pretty amazing. Since then, that's 11 years ago, and now we've got 180,000 customers in 100 countries. So we're pretty excited about what we're doing. I didn't start the bank with the idea that, or knowing the information we all have now about, banksters dealing in derivatives and stealing the funds from their customers. I didn't have a clue about any of that. I just wanted a job that didn't entail me working 60 hours a week. You know, that's where I came from. I've got 9 kids, by the way, and most of them are around. They travel around the world, and I travel around after them.
Well, you know, I think that's probably one of the best things to do, really, is that if you've got a bad bill from the bank, just become your own bank. It's just like, hey, well, look, if they can just make stuff up out of thin air and profit massively from it, why can't I, and at the same time, not rip people off?
Well, absolutely. Anybody can run a bank these days. It's easy. We've got the technology. We've got certainly we've got customers. We don't have competition from banks. If you give any type of service, it's better than what you get from most of the mainstream banks. We use a software package called Loom, which has got to be the best and most secure financial software package on the planet. And there's nothing that even comes close. The actual website is loom.cc, and we use that as a backing for GoldNow Bank. So, and it works really well. It's private and it's strong. It's the strongest. What shall I say? It's very secure. It's very, very secure, and I'd recommend people use it. We use it, actually, as the backing for Golden, our bank, and it works really well. I haven't had any complaints whatsoever with all the customers we've got. They all like it, so, and that's a good thing.
Well, you know, it seems to me that the whole banking system itself has been, you know, basically taken over by corrupt individuals, corporations, New World Order type folk. And as a result, they are pushing now the entire population into either A, receivership, or B, into the arms of somebody else who's not doing business in such a corrupt way, which is why I'd probably wager you're actually getting more customers by the day. Now, thinking about the banking system in itself, I mean, are we capable of perhaps having a royal rumble with the current banking cartel and actually beat them out via competition? Or do you think that they'll simply just manipulate the market so as to squeeze everybody else out using their inordinate amount of power and influence?
Well, you don't have to use the banking system the way it is. I've got a number of Nevada customers who don't have any bank accounts at all in America, and they run big businesses. So they don't rely or use anything to do with the American banking system in America. They don't deal with... you know, Chase or Wells Fargo or anybody. They don't have any American bank accounts at all. So there's options. You know, there's obviously options. We're in a worldwide, you know, with the internet, we're in the worldwide, And so there's no reason to stay cloistered within the country that you have a bank account in. In fact, I would recommend everybody go offshore and get other bank accounts in countries that you can trust, where they do have banking privacy.
Are you talking about the Cayman Islands or Switzerland or something like that? Because it's like the status symbol to have a Swiss bank account.
Well, I don't think most Americans... I think Americans are not allowed to have Swiss bank accounts according to the Swiss banks now. They won't give Americans... they won't give American residents a bank account, and they won't give American citizens a bank account. So that's out.
That's a bit discriminatory. Are they the only country that's not allowed to have bank accounts? It's like, hey, Americans are corrupt, but the rest of the world's just fine.
Well, actually, to tell you the truth, I think there must be other countries that won't allow, genocide by banking, I call it. There must be other countries, but I just haven't heard of it. I'm in the process at the moment of negotiating with some Icelandic banks for our American customers to have accounts there. So, and we're not talking tax evasion, and we're not talking any fraud whatsoever. We're talking safer banking. It's just not safe to bank. I wouldn't be recommending Australians having Australian bank accounts, and I wouldn't recommend Americans having American bank accounts. The English aren't too bad, but there's... the top four banks in the UK you wouldn't want to be dealing with, and you can figure out who they are. They're particularly bad, some of those banks. But, you know, the main thing is that we all want to do business. We all need to buy milk and bread and butter and buy fuel for our cars, and we all need to live, pay the school fees. And, well, that's another subject. Don't send your kids to some of these status schools. But anyway, there is some good schools out there. But I recommend homeschooling, if you want to keep your kids away from bullies. But that's another subject. We might go down that road. But with the banking, what I particularly don't like about the banking system is there's very little privacy in there. There is terrorists in the world. There is launderers in the world.
And most of them work at the Bank of England or MI5.
But, you know, the majority of people we deal with are normal people. You know, they want banking privacy. They want to, you know, get some assets together. They want to save money or gold or silver, which is what they're now doing, to buy a house. And they don't use dollar fiat currency to buy the house. They use gold and silver to buy the house. You can buy a house now with a very small amount of silver. In fact, the whole house you can buy with silver. But the seller of the house doesn't want any paper money. They want silver. They want hard currency, literally. Hard currency being metal. So, you know, and that's, and I've got customers now buying cars using gold and silver. And, you know, there's a lot of people now using gold and silver to buy furniture and goods and, you know, all the stuff that we all need. And they don't particularly want, you know, other parties knowing about their purchases. So that's why they prefer to deal with a silver and gold-based currency that's private. You know, is there fraud? Actually, I went into the bank one time and the girl said to me, I'd had an account in this particular bank in Australia for many years, and I went in there and she said to me, "What do you do?" And I'm going, What do I do? She said, "Yeah, what do you do?" I said, "I've been banking here for 7 years. You mean to tell me you don't know what I do?" She said, "I haven't got a clue." She said, "I see you sell gold on your application. You put down that you sell gold." So she said, "What we did was we identified you as a jewelry shop." And I said, "Well, I'm not a jewelry shop. What I do is I sell digital gold currency." And she goes, and the blood drained from her face. And she said, "Oh, my God." She said, "Do you know what your customers spend the digital gold currency on?" And I said, "I haven't got a clue. And what's more, I'm not going to ask them." And she said to me, "Oh, my God, the potentiality for fraud is huge." And I said, well, we verify our customers. You know, we do verify our customers. We have a level of verification. I said, "How do you deal with your fraudsters?" And what, you know, she said, "What about people?" She said, "You want to use
Well, here's how they deal with their fraudsters. They promote them."
Well, actually, Vinny, she says to me, "Look," she said, "your customers could be buying child pornography." And I said, "Well, they could be, yes." But I said, "How do you deal with your customers who buy child pornography?" And she said, "We're having a lovely day today, aren't we?" Completely changed the subject. Because I said to her, "Look, here's an opportunity for us to share, you know, how we do business and how we avoid." I can identify a child pornographer in about 10 seconds. I've got no problems with that. I can easily identify fraudsters now after 11 years in the banking industry, the private banking industry. I've got no problems at all identifying a fraudster. It's easy.
Can I ask you something? Being in the private banking industry, have you identified anybody in that industry who's not a fraudster?
Well,
you know, is it six in one hand, half dozen in the other, you know?
Well, actually, to tell you the truth, what I do, Vinny, is I verify my customers' names, addresses, and phone numbers. So, and that does it for me. I'm happy with that. And what they do, I have no doubt in my mind that some of those customers will be using their gold to buy, recreational drugs. And I recently had a guy that was buying recreational drugs using gold. But guess what? He was living in Amsterdam. So, you know, there's no law against using recreational drugs in Amsterdam. Well, there wasn't. I think there is now, but there wasn't then. The point was is that he was using gold and silver to buy recreational drugs that were allowed in his country where he lived.
He must have been getting some Acapulco gold.
Who knows what he was getting? I don't smoke marijuana. I used to when I was a kid, but I don't anymore. So, but I just don't want to. I've got, you know, I get a great high out of life the way I'm operating now without the use of, recreational drugs. Don't get me wrong, I'm not against recreational drugs. I feel that if anybody wants to use drugs of any description, they can. I mean, I've got no problem with that as long as they know what they're doing and they're adults and they can make a decision. Nanny state's not needed to actually tell people that smoking marijuana is wrong or right. It may be right to you if you're, you know, of age to, you know, make that decision. Do you understand? I do believe in education. I believe that if you want to take heroin, you better get educated on it before you start. You understand?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were talking about drug policy last night, I think it was, and my take on drug policy is that all drugs should be legal. okay? But
absolutely.
With the proviso that if you are going to use any recreational drugs, you need to be schooled in how to do it safely, preferably with an individual who you trust, who is experienced in doing it themselves, who is also a well-adjusted person in society. Because if we were to, say, arrest everybody who takes recreational drugs in our society, it would be probably, in my opinion, the majority, if you include alcohol and tobacco, of course, and caffeine, which kills approximately 10,000 people a year in the US, unlike marijuana, who has never killed anybody, and let's put it in a time frame, ever. So the question becomes not how dangerous these drugs are, it's how dangerous the drug users are, whether or not they become abusers, whether or not they actually understand and comprehend the choices that they're making with a responsible, reasonable approach. Now, sure. you can't legislate for that. That's the problem, is that you'd have to give somebody a license to take recreational drugs. And I don't think that's the correct thing. In fact, I kind of don't believe in licenses in general. I think that it's just another control mechanism that the state puts on everybody so that you have to keep paying them money X and X times a year or whatever. Basically, it's a restriction on your freedom. And as long as you're not hurting nobody, doing any damage to anybody's property, government should get the F out of my business.
Well, yeah, I tend to agree. I think that there is some, the government do have some uses, I believe. They should be limited to, protecting my privacy, and they should also be limited to protecting me against aggression and, you know, violence. I heard recently, Vinny, that New Zealand women are particularly violent, and do you know why?
I think it's because the New Zealand men are just such knobs. And my very special guest is Graham Kelly from Australia. And we'll be right back after this very short break where he'll reveal to us the reason why New Zealand women are so violent. Back in a moment.
Good answer, man.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, huh? So you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
Welcome back. What you mean? You mean it's business time.
Oh yeah.
It's business. It's business.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. On AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, you can join us in the chat room there and toddle along or whatever. It's business time, ladies and gentlemen, and if you can't create business yourself, just lie about it and say that there's a problem that doesn't exist, and I'm sure you'll be able to manipulate heaps of people into giving you all their money so that you can collapse their economy and enslave them and take all their real assets off them. Speaking of which, we have a banker on the line.
How cynical you are, Vinny.
Well, you know, I operate under a lot of assumptions, and basically, if you assume everything that the government is trying to do is evil, 99% of the time you'll be correct, because 1% of the time, hey, they do a pretty fashionably good job. But it doesn't mean that you should vote for... It's kind of like... I don't know. For some reason, people think that when they vote, they have a choice. You know, but the reality is you don't actually have a choice. You get provided your choices. The media darling who winds up becoming the prime sinister or whatever becomes the ruler of your country by fiat, basically, full-on dictate. Even in New Zealand, And this is a real interesting thing. It's the reason why the No Confidence Party was formed. We have a fiat voting system. So if you don't vote, but you're registered to vote, your vote gets given by proxy to the winners.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that at all, Vinny.
Well,
I'm not interested in voting at all, but and I don't vote on purpose. But I didn't know that.
This is the reason why politics is just such a shambles and why I'm so cynical, because I'm not retarded enough to think that the politicians are going to do anything to help me, my country, or my people. You know, they're all scum. And if they're not scum, they soon will be if they get elected. It's kind of like Lenin said, "Don't worry, comrades. As soon as we get elected, then we will do what we want with the country. But in the meantime, let's just tell them all the nice things that they want to hear so that we can get in power." That's pretty much it, man. That's how politics works. They lie to you to get in power, and then they screw you over once they are. And then after getting screwed over for 3 years, they say, "Okay, do you want us again?"
And, what I'm particularly annoyed about, and does affect everybody that's listening, and in fact everybody in the world, that banks are in collusion with governments. And what happens there is that the government's license the banks to do derivative trading and all this other stuff. Which causes the wealth transfer from the middle class back to the bankers. And, of course, the politicians would then get a kickback from the banks. It's kind of like a symbiote relationship, I guess. And it's been happening in Australia for over 100 years, and it's been happening in the US for about the same time. So it was a fairly insidious, operation that none of us understood. But how we understood it was when I was a kid, when I was 10 years old, back in 1965, decimal currency, actually 1964, I think it came in, whatever. One day back then, decimal currency came into Australia and I went to the movies and it cost me 10 cents. Well, recently, 40 years later, I went to the movies and it cost me 50 bucks. So that's how they've stolen the monies. What happens is the money's devaluing all the time, because it's becoming more worthless as time goes on, which is the reason why people buy gold and silver as literally a hedge against fiat currency reductions. I think in Zimbabwe now they're using gold as currency, literal
Zimbabwe
gold.
Zimbabwe is using gold as currency?
Yeah,
well, that's very strange.
Well, they didn't have a choice. I mean, how do you deal with a $100 billion note?
That's true. That's true. I mean, it's like, "Hey, bro, can you break 100 billion? I need some change."
Well, the 100 billion was worthless as well. That's the other problem. So,
wouldn't even buy you a tea bag, mate.
Well, yeah, exactly. But what happened was that the people over there started dealing in gold, and what happened was effectively the economy fixed itself. So, and that would happen in America and Australia and New Zealand and Argentina and South Africa and everywhere else, for that matter.
Well, so, is that the key, really, to a sustainable currency of wealth, is to back it with those rare metals? Because I watched a documentary last night by inflation.us about the college conspiracy. And one part in this documentary film that I found was particularly interesting was when they compared what would happen if somebody, instead of paying college tuition fees, just bought gold and silver. And it turns out that by the time somebody gets out of college, they're in enough debt to qualify as basically a massive mortgage, whereas the person who bought gold or silver would have appreciated in value to the point where they would have been able to buy a house outright.
Good point, but the only problem with that is that if I buy gold and silver, I don't buy it as an investment. All it does is hedge the losses you would have taken had you had paper money. So very rarely gold and silver I treat as an investment. Basically, just what it does is it maintains your purchasing power. Recently, I had somebody who bought $1 million worth of gold from me, and he paid 800 an ounce. Well, it was a couple of years ago. Paid 800 an ounce for it. And I supplied him $1 million worth of gold into his gold in our bank account. And then it went up to $1,200 an ounce at some stage. And he ordered a debit card from me and said, can you please give me some, you know, card credits? And here's some gold to do that with. And he sold me, I think, $4,000 worth of gold at $1,200 an ounce. And I made the mistake of saying to him, well done. You know, you've turned you've parlayed your $800 an ounce into $1,200 an ounce. In my way of thinking at that stage, I just figured he'd done really well and said, well done. He said, I haven't made a penny. What are you talking about, Graham? I said, what? He said, I haven't made a penny. He said, what you're witness to is the fact that the gold value has gone up against the paper going down. He said, I can only buy with what I used to pay $800 for previously. It now cost me $1,200. He said, I haven't made a penny. And he's right. You know, back in 1900, you could buy a suit with an ounce of gold. Well, today you can buy a good suit with an ounce of gold. You see the point? So gold has maintained its value. Its purchasing power. So we don't sell or provide gold and silver as an investment. Basically, all it does is it hedges the losses that the paper will incur, which is guaranteed. All fiat currencies will go down in value. So is it investment? No, it's a hedge against deflation. You understand?
Well, inflation rather.
Well, inflation, exactly right. So you had it right. So this scenario is that an ounce of gold back in 1900 will buy what an ounce of gold will buy today. But what the Chinese government, of course, is doing is dumping as much of that paper as they can so that they can buy the hard metal. And while there's a perception that there's some value there, they're cashing in their, you know, massive debt, well, massive US dollars that they're holding. They're quitting as much of it as they can to buy gold, which gets delivered to China. So that's how they're getting around it. And hopefully they won't, they think they may not lose some, well, they know they're going to lose, but they're getting as much of that paper into gold as they can, and so is most. By the way, most of the central banks are now doing the same thing. They're now buying gold like crazy.
Well, you know, I think they're trying to corner the market, and that's the difficult thing when you talk about backing currencies with gold and silver, is that traditionally, basically, big international bankers wind up cornering the market on it. So, like, currently the IMF and World Bank are some of the largest hoarders of gold worldwide, and they artificially inflate and deflate the currency based on what they want. And at the moment, they're flooding the market with gold to keep the price down because everybody is getting into gold, getting into silver, because of the fact that they know that hyperinflation is on its way and it has been building up for quite some time, and if they want to have anything of value left after the economic crashes and whatnot, they really do need something that stores the value. And that's the thing about gold and silver is that people don't realize is that it never actually changes in value. It's the currency that you traded in that does. Gold and silver has always cost the same. Basically, it'll still buy the same amount of crap today as it did 1,000 years ago. Okay, that's why it's been used.
You're absolutely right. The difference is, though, there's a sneaky version of gold and a sneaky version of silver. And, you know, that's the paper silver and the paper gold. So, for example, in the Perth Mint in Australia, they sell gold and silver. That's what the mint does. It's owned by the Western Australian government. But you wouldn't want to have any gold and silver unless you took delivery. The reason for that is that they sell the face value of gold and the face value of silver, but they deliver paper to you. They don't deliver gold. In other words, they say, oh, we store it for you. So there's two types of gold. There's two types of silver. There's the silver that's real and the silver that's paper. Do you understand? So the IMF are actually broke. They have no real gold. They only have paper gold. Do you understand? So,
well, I thought that after in the US in the 30s, I think it was, the government basically issued a decree that they're going to just basically steal everybody's gold. And they put it into Fort, and then they put it into Fort Knox, and then the IMFers came in and stole it all out of Fort Knox.
Well, actually, there's nothing in Fort Knox now, but whether the IMF got it or not is another issue. I know for a fact that I'm very confident, I'm 99% confident the IMF is broke. They recently went to Ireland, but they used the assets in Ireland to base the bailout of Ireland. By the way, those Irish people ought not to allow that, because as they did in Iceland, the Icelandic people said, look, we're not going to tolerate some politician signing off my life and my children's lives and my grandchildren's lives and ad on infinitum. If the politicians sign off on a bailout, then the politicians can pay for it. The people in Ireland voted and to the referendum, no, they're not going to be bailing out the banks. And good on them, too. I thought it was always going to be America that made that decision. But no, it was the Icelandic people. And I'm impressed with Iceland, let me tell you. The main thing is that, and the people from Ireland, the people from Greece, the people from Portugal, the people from Spain should not be accepting IMF bailouts, because all the bailout money goes to is the bankers. It doesn't do any people any good. And if my government by the way, the Australian government's borrowing $100 million a day. I think New Zealand government's borrowing $300 million a day.
New Zealand government isn't borrowing $300 million a day, not to any report that I've seen. The government first came out, said we're borrowing $250 million a week. Then a little bit later they said, well, we've actually been borrowing $280 million a week this whole time. And then they came out and said, oh, well, we're actually borrowing closer to $300 million. And then they came out and said, we're actually borrowing closer to $350 million. And then the Bank of New Zealand chief, which is incidentally an Australian corporation, came out and said that the New Zealand government is actually getting into $450 million of debt a week. It's the thing. Whenever they tell you that we're getting in debt to a certain extent, they never tell you the full figure. They just drip feed the figure to you, you know? It's like, hey, look, everybody, you're just too frickin' fragile for us to tell you the truth. So what we're going to do is we're going to lie to you just a little bit less as time goes on, until eventually you get conditioned into believing and accepting that we're getting your entire country into massive debt into foreign banks.
Absolutely. It's just unbelievable to me that they're doing this. But this whole Arab uprising that's happening in all those Arab countries, it's nothing to do with anything other than the same subject that we're talking about. It's banker occupation and terrorist bankers, taking in cahoots, I guess the word is, with dictators. And people have just had enough. They said, you could be a Muslim, or you could be a Jew, or you could be a Christian.
Or you could be going off to break. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest from Aussie is Graham Kelly. We're talking about the banking system, and it rhymes with another word that sounds like banking. But, never mind. You can't say that under FCC regulations. And we'll be right back after the break to discuss this just a little bit more. Back in a moment. Mysteries are just a dream. Speaking of things that are a dream, bankers actually doing the right thing when they control the world's economy, politics, and the military-industrial complex. If you will, it is no dream, so Theodore Herzl, the Israeli terrorist, said. But who knows what the future holds for us. But we have a few questions from the chat room for you here, Graham. We want to know if you think money should be backed by a commodity, and if so, how could you stop it being traded and have its value messed with?
Okay, good point. The thing with it is that if you're using, money, effectively gold and silver is money anyway. That's the real money. Paper money is the, what should I say, that's the alternative. So gold and silver is money, and the commodity is the metal. And how you stop it being traded and being messed with is by not allowing, not a question of not allowing, but just avoiding the banking system with their paper funny money. So in other words, if I owe you $100, say, then I would pay you in silver and gold via Gold Now Bank. That's one option you could take, and one way I could pay you. I could go buy some gold and silver from any of the dealers and pay you in metal, hard metal, but that's problematic. If you live in Amsterdam and I live in, Australia, then it's problematic getting you the silver. It's very expensive. Recently, I rang the Perth Mint and said, I want you to send me a kilo of silver. And they wanted to charge me a 30% premium on spot plus about a 20% charge for freight, which was just absolutely gouging. So I have two daughters who live in Perth, so I said to them, can you pop down to the Perth Mint and pick it up? And they said, we could do that. So I rang the Perth Mint and said, can you give me some silver? My daughters are going to come and pick it up. And they said, highly unusual, but we can tolerate that, but you've got to pay a 30% premium. Oh, I said, too expensive. So we just cut it. So how you avoid the people mucking around with it is by using it on a peer-to-peer basis and just avoid the banking system altogether. It's easy to do, by the way.
Well, if it's so easy to do, then my assumption would be the only thing that's stopping them is the current bankers who basically don't want it that way. They want fiat control of the currency so that they can basically price everybody else out of any kind of liquidity, any kind of credit, or basically any kind of freedom. They want to debase everybody's currency so that they can't buy jack, so therefore it limits their power and destroys the middle class, which are the only thing really standing between a despotic state and any kind of republic, freedom, / democracy. And I don't like democracy at all, and I think the founding fathers were right when they say that democracy is frickin' dangerous because it only winds up destroying people in a violent hail of gunfire or through starvation. And when we talk about the banking system, they've completely subverted politics because he who has the gold makes the rules, and they make up gold.
The problem is they have gold. They have gold paper. So in other words, they sell the paper. It's what do you call it? EFTs. ETFs. So basically, the end result is that if you've got GLD or SLV, I think it is. That's not gold or silver, that's just paper. So you want to avoid those types of gold and get the real stuff and get the, the real silver and metal, gold. Well, we sell that, but, we keep the gold and silver in six countries, not anywhere near any of your listeners. So we then digitally deliver the gold that backs their accounts. So we haven't got paper gold, we've got real gold, but it's hidden well within six countries, so as to not get it confiscated. I can't even speak this morning, so as to not get it confiscated.
Right. Well, what about banning, for example? Do you use fractional reserve banking in your bank?
Absolutely not. We have 100% backing, at least. And sometimes we have as much as 300%. So what happens is that when there's a run on the bank, and there always will be because human nature is fickle, we just pay everybody out and open the doors the next morning. In fact, we never close. We work 24/7. So what that means is that when we have a run on the bank, sometimes, you know, there's rumours starts about people, the money, you know, not the value not being there. Forget money. We don't use money. We use metal. And if somebody doesn't run on the bank, what we do is we just pay everybody out. Now, there's, we may have a cash flow problem because it may all be tied up in gold and silver, but what we do with our customers and say, okay, well, we've got to sell all of the gold or silver in our system to pay you out your, you know, $75,000 worth of gold or silver, whatever it is. But they will get their money. It may take a week or two, but they'll get it. But the point is, every day we're open for business. We never actually close. We're open every day. So with that, I mean, people just use their digital gold currency to buy cars and houses, and you know, if they live in Amsterdam, I guess they can buy marijuana.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Wouldn't that be nice? Now, speaking of talking about Australia, my brother says that it's basically like Bogan Central. You know, there's nothing but Fords and Holdens around there. And I was just wondering what the bankers are kind of cruising around driving now. I mean, are they driving Holdens or Frauds?
Frauds. Oh, Vinny, you're bad. You're very bad. I don't know what they drive. I don't hang around with bankers on purpose. They're very strange people. They look good. They've got all the right clothes and they've got the right cars and they've got the right, you know, staff. You know, they look good. But I just don't like their system. It's just like it's too intrusive and it's, you know, it's just too intrusive and it's not cost-effective at all. It's just not at all. You know, as I said, I've got American customers who don't use the American banks and they live nicely using gold and silver.
Well, I think that it might be a good idea to start doing that because, well, have a look at New Zealand, for example. I think we've got something like 7 big banks here.
We do? Okay.
And out of those 7, like the ANZ, BNZ, TSB and various other anagrams, Westpac, blah, 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 blah. In fact, they're all Aussie-owned banks, right? And I find it very strange that the New Zealand government, guess which bank they use to do all their banking? An Australian bank. So what the F is the difference, man, between New Zealand and Australia, really? Because it's always been the bankers that have all the power who decide who gets elected and decide which direction the effing country goes in. And the New Zealand government is using an Aussie bank to handle all their transactions and investments. Who owns this country? It's certainly not the people. And I'm not, and I don't think it's any different in any other country in the world at this point, you know. I mean, people would, you know, be lucky to have Robert Mugabe as a dictator, you know?
Oh, Robert, he needs serious help. But one thing you may not know, that in New Zealand there is a bank that you're not aware of that's in New Zealand, and it's called Bank of America. They've got branches there. Well, they've got at least one branch there in Auckland.
Well, did you know that New Zealand's Prime Minister has shares in Bank of America?
The Prime Minister?
Yeah.
The Prime Minister. Okay, I like that. Actually, I think politicians, a lot of the politicians that I know about, that I know of, some of them are just downright, just, what shall I say? I don't think they're complicit with the banking system. But the new politicians very quickly learn where their bread is buttered upon and they quickly learn the ropes internally. And they learn that the banks have got a lot of money and they, you know, end up getting lobbied by them, as it were. And when I say lobbied, they, you know, checks written and cash delivered and stuff like that. So the main thing is that we don't particularly want to get involved in any of that stuff. And as a result, you know, we don't play that game because we, you know, what we want to do is have a worldwide currency that's based on metal, gold and silver, where somebody in, you know, London can pay you, Vinny, for your products online, and somebody can live in Hawaii or, you know, Wisconsin and do the same. The whole point is we've now got a worldwide currency called silver and gold, and we can just, See, the bankers, I'm completely out of that sphere now. I just keep away from them. And as a result, we don't have anything to do with them, and they probably don't want to have anything to do with me, and that suits us both fine.
And you get less venereal diseases.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Well, maybe that's me being a bit harsh.
I think you're a harsh man overall, Vinny, but the situation being is that the banking system is flawed big time. I'm not saying gold and silver is perfect either, by the way. It's got its flaws, internal flaws as well.
All right. And we'll be right back after this very short break. My very special guest is Graham Kelly, joining me for the full 2 hours. Today, the subject is the banking system. And if you change the B with a W, it seems to be a lot more accurate. Now, we're talking about Aussie and New Zealand. We're on the two fabulous slave South Pacific, English-speaking island-chained nations. And it's just so frickin' fabulous to be a slave, isn't it? Especially when somebody can just make up the means of your enslavement off of a frickin' printing press. I don't think for a moment that our politicians are going to wind up doing something about this problem. After all, they're beholden to them because who funds their campaigns? You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. That's right, it's The Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the future, from the fabulous fluoridated island-chained nation of New Zealand in the slave South Pacific. And speaking of the slave South Pacific, a very special guest from Australia, the desert surrounded by alcoholics, it's Graham Kelly. Welcome back, mate.
Thanks a lot, mate.
Okay. Getting on to something a little bit more serious here. I know it's not my forte, but we were talking
I used to drink a lot of alcohol years ago when I was younger, but I don't hardly ever touch the stuff now, Vinny.
Well, of course you were. You're an Australian. Given.
Well, yeah, exactly right. My father was an alcoholic, and he beat the family up and had all types of problems in that area, but, I drank when I was younger, but then as I got older, I tended to not drink so much, and then eventually I almost don't drink at all. Recently, I was pulled up for a breath test, and the cop says to me, breathe down the tube. And he said, have you been drinking? And I said, no, I haven't drunk. And he said, when was the last time you drank? And I said, 9 months ago at Christmas. And I had a glass of liqueur. And that's what I had for Christmas. So it was 9 months earlier. Anyway,
did he make you do the sobriety test anyway?
Well, he said breathe down. Well, my son and I have an agreement. He goes to nightclubs at night with these drunk women, and he doesn't like to drive when he's been drinking. We've kind of drilled it into all the kids that if you drink and drive, you're really stupid. So my son said, look, Dad, if I need to be picked up at 3 a.m. from a nightclub, can you pick me up? And I said, sure, I'll do that. Even if I have to wake up and get up and go and get them, because I don't want them driving when they've been drinking. So this time I'm dropped off the boy and to the nightclub. It's midnight, and on the way back, this happened in New Zealand. And on the way back, I got pulled up. But every time I go out, I got pulled up. It wasn't just a one-off. I just got sick and tired of being pulled up for breathe down the tube. So I said to the young policeman, look, I'm not going to breathe down your tube. And he said, why not? Have you been drinking? I said, I haven't drunk for 9 months. And he said, well, I'll arrest you if you don't. I said, well, arrest me. And he did. Took me down there and put me in the cell. And I'm thinking, this is interesting, because here I am, a law-abiding citizen. I just refused to breathe down the tube. So I went. They charged me with the offence, and apparently in New Zealand, it's up to $4,000 fine, 3 months in jail, and mandatory loss of license for 6 months. So, but I didn't care because it was a thing with me that it was a policy. I'm a rebel. I come from Australia. Anyway, the end result is that I went before the magistrate, and he said, "Mr. Kelly, what are you doing in my courtroom?" And I said, "Well, Judge, I decided not to breathe down the tube." And he said, I read the report. Why didn't you breathe down the tube? And I said, well, every time I go out, I told him the story. And he said, well, I'm going to let you off with a $250 fine.
Oh, he's letting you off. Isn't that kind of him to only gather a small amount of revenue?
Yeah, well, plus 140 court costs. Plus my lawyer was a $500. Plus I had a mat. Yeah, exactly. And I lost my license, a mandatory license for 6 months. But I said, well, Judge, as long as you don't take my pilot's license off me, I'll be fine. And he said...
Yeah, absolutely. Then, it's not like you're going to, like, accidentally fly into a building.
You are a cynical old bugger, Vinny. Anyway, to cut a long story short, the police then made application to take my pilot's license off me because of the fact I was an irresponsible idiot. The judge said, I've got no jurisdiction over the aviation industry. Get out of my court.
So, oh, great.
Well,
this is the thing. Isn't it like they're just straight-up bullies, and they just want to make you feel like a slave? They want to demoralize you, to make you just basically the most pathetic scum ever. It's one thing to be, I don't know, a criminal or whatever, but the problem is that the people who are supposed to be enforcing the laws are the biggest criminals in the country. And
well, they're opportunists.
It's extortion.
Well, I think it is, but I don't think all police are extortioners, and I don't think all bankers are banksters, and I don't think all school teachers are, you know, terrible. I think most are, but not all are. It's their system that causes them to be like that. And one of the reasons why I don't hang around with bankers is, one, I don't make the money that they make. They make a lot more money than I do, but I sleep at night because, you know, we make our money honestly, I believe. But the other thing is I don't want to become like them, so I don't want to hang around with them. I tell my kids, hey, if you want to, you know, hang around with idiots, just you'll become one. You just turn into the people like you hang around with. So what we do is we have we just always tell them the kids don't hang around with idiots. Yeah, but now they're older, they generally don't anyway.
Well, and the reverse is true as well. You know, if you hang around with people who are successful, intelligent, friendly, happy, healthy, and have a good sense of humor, they will rub off on you. Sure enough, as chalk rubs off a board, you will wind up becoming infected with happiness if you hang around happy people. You know, just like, for example, I choose and absolutely choose to not hang around depressed people anymore. Okay, and it's not that I'm not concerned about them or anything along those lines. I mean, I know what feeling sad is all about. You know, I was arrested once for cannabis, and I was facing 8 years of jail. You know, if you want to have some kind of a challenge as to your personal constitution and your ability to survive terrible situations, get yourself arrested and face jail time. That is bound to knock the wind out of you.
Right. Well, you got 8 years or potentially 8 years
for a first offence for 13 grams of cannabis.
Oh, my God. So
the person in front of me...
Who was the victim? You were.
Yeah, basically. I wasn't advised of my rights either, so they said, oh, well, you know, if you be honest with us and everything, we'll go easy on you. So, of course, I was honest with them, and, of course, everything that I admitted they used as evidence against me, and even though I admitted all the evidence against me anyway, they still made things up to make it appear even worse.
Oh, well. Obviously, you hang around with the wrong type of people, Vinny.
Well, you know, and that was the thing. Once I did get arrested, all the people who were, you know, coming round to my place and smoking up with me and whatever, or buying off me, they disappeared, and I never saw them again. And that was the thing. My entire life had been built up on a lie, and that's the thing that I think that one incidents of suffering, being betrayed simultaneously by everybody who I thought was my friend, as well as the people who I thought were supposed to be peace officers, who were supposed to have integrity, and then going through the legal system and finding out that the person in front of me, I was up for 8 years for a first offence, the person in front of me, this was the second or third time in court, and this time he was up on growing cannabis plants, assault, sexual assault, evading arrest. I got 300 hours community service for mine. He got 150. Okay? Explain that one to me. The entire system, everywhere, under every single scenario, is effed up, in my opinion. And it's not and it's not because I've just made this up or something. It's because I've seen it happen. And whenever I hear people and have people on the show that talk about how the police have screwed them over, or how the state government, local officials, etc., are corrupt, or the judges are in the back pockets of certain politicians and business leaders, etc., I don't even have to research into it to know that it's true.
Right, right. Well, my son got arrested at a party in New Zealand when we were there, and he was arrested for drunk and disorderly. But the problem was he even though he'd been drinking, he wasn't drunk, and there was no disorder about him. He rang me up and said, "Can you come and pick me up from this party? The police have invaded." So I went down, and there was about 50 jackbooted police officers with Darth Vader helmets, with batons and shields. So I went to the, obviously I identified the leader down there, you know, this bald-headed South African guy, copper policeman, and I said, "Are you the boss here?" And he was very aggressive with me, and I said, "Look, you know, I'm just inquiring about my son." And so, then at that stage I saw my son, and he wore, because my car was parked on the side of the road, and there was about, I don't know, 20 kids. Yeah, when I say kids, 20-year-olds, my son was about 25 at the time, and he walked through this police line, and one tripped him up and slammed him to the ground, and then arrested him for drunk and disorderly. And they put him in the van with all these other kids, the arresting van, and I parked right behind the van, and the girl driving the police van, a constable, she came out and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm just, my son's in that van, and I'm going to follow the van wherever it goes because I want to get him out." And she said, "It's highly unorthodox." And I said, "Well, that's fine. I can handle that." So they drove down to the police station about an hour later. We were waiting for about an hour. Drove down to the police station, and I walked in and said, "I've come to get my son out." And they said, "He'll be out in a few hours." They were a bit surprised. But anyway, the end result was they charged him with this charge, and all the other kids couldn't afford legal fees, so they all charged, you know, they admitted that they were guilty. But I said to my son, "No, we're going to get a lawyer and get you off." And we got him off. It cost us $2,000. The problem is it cost $2,000 to get him off, and had we agreed that he'd been drunk and disorderly, then he would have got off with a warning. But we didn't want that charge against his name, so we took it to court, and we got the lawyer, and eventually they threw it out of court. And but it cost $2,000, and that was the price of justice.
Well, you know, and that's why I always say that the justice system is the just us system, because it doesn't affect anybody that has huge quantities of crime going on, because, hey, basically you can't commit huge amounts of crime unless you've got impunity or immunity from prosecution. And in my opinion, what's really happening in our countries now is that the higher up people with very good business connections, banking connections, government connections, etc., are more or less immune to do whatever corrupt practice they want. Now, what happens, like for example, with commissions, whenever there's an investigation about something, an investigation into corruption, fraud, or mismanagement of public monies, funds, etc. Basically, the only reason why they set up these investigative panels is so that they can gag everybody from talking about it until the investigation is over, and the investigation always turns out to be a whitewash anyway, and people get off scot-effing-free. So that's basically the whole system in a nutshell, is if something's wrong, they'll make sure that they say that nobody can talk about it until everybody's forgotten about it, and then they'll release a lie to say nothing went wrong in the first place. You know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Government to a T.
That makes sense. Well, one more thing too. Well, I believe in being a sovereign individual, so we take responsibility for our own life. We don't rely on the local police forces. In our communities where we live, we police our own community. We have our own elected persons who, and it might be the local police officer, but more often than not, it's not the local police officer. It's an elected person within the community. So I believe there should be protection for people within the community. It may be the police that does that, but quite a lot of the time it's not. It's an elected person, and they'll get recompensed as well. They get money from the community where they will look after the community. So I believe the community is responsible. That's made up of individuals within the community for education, and certainly not status to education that we're all aware of and that we know about. Terrible education I received in Australia when I was here as a child. I just didn't fit in. I was voted most likely to fail in school. So, anyway, that's another subject.
Well, it's because you didn't just swallow everything that they told you and then regurgitate it like they told you.
I was a bad student. I did get 100% for English, but I got 0% for effort, whatever that meant. So, and my worst subjects were chemistry and physics and technical drawing. But, you know, the technical drawing teacher helped me cheat so I'd get 51%, so his class would be all passing the grade. So he kind of sat down with me in the middle of a test and showed me how to cheat, like cheated with me, showed me how to do it, which is pretty amazing. Actually, I thought that was good because I think that when you make mistakes, it's an opportunity to learn, and mistakes have been stigmatized within the schooling system. And whole thinking patterns are where if you make a mistake, that's the wrong, bad thing. But that's the only way to learn. The only way to learn is by making mistakes. The idea is not to make the same mistake more than once or twice.
Yeah. if only the voting public knew that. Hey, voting for Labor. Bad idea, because they screwed us over, sold all our public assets, and passed draconian legislation. Okay, well, let's vote for National instead. Oh, wait, they did the exact same thing. Let's vote for Labor again. You know?
Yeah, well, exactly right. They're both tarred on the same brush. So that's why I don't vote. And I take responsibility in the communities that I'm in. We have a banking system that bypasses the banksters. So not all banks are crooked. Most of them are, not all. Most politicians, a lot of politicians are crooked. Some are not. But you tend to become like the people you hang around with. If you're a young, enthusiastic politician and you've just been elected into the system, you get corrupted sooner or later by the old boys who know how the system works. So, and then the same as the banks. You don't want to hang around with those people. You know, my mum used to say to me, don't hang around with those heroin addicts. If you do, you'll become a heroin addict. And you know what? She was right. You know, if you hang around people who, by these days, I've got no problem with drugs, as long as you understand what you're doing. And as you said earlier, you know, as long as you're educated about what the heck you're doing and nobody's forced against their will to do what they don't want to do. And the same with prostitution. I believe that prostitution is a personal choice the girl would make. That might be a idealistic, you know, thinking.
That's acting under the assumption she's not already a heroin addict, though.
Well, that makes sense. But the point is that if a girl's good looking and she wants to sell favors and sexual favors, and that's her business. And as long as she knows what the heck she's doing and she wants to take gold and silver for it, great.
Yeah, I mean, nobody could accuse her of being unprofessional. It's the oldest profession in the world. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Graham Kelly, the anti-bankster. I'm going to dub you. And we'll be right back after the break.
Driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations so that I'm all dying in exasperation.
I can engage in mental masturbation. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the lighter side of genocide. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Join us in the chat room at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and you can also join the Vinnie Eastwood Show Facebook group, and we have a little chat of that too going through the show. And I'd also like to give a shout out to the handful of hardcore Vinnie Eastwood fans that are in the Vinnie Eastwood Show chat group at the moment. Just thanks very much. And now my very special guest, Graham Kelly, is here. And we were talking over the break about you do a lot of travelling, right, Graham?
Yes, I do. I'm actually a permanent traveller. And the reason why I'm a permanent traveller is I don't wish to be a resident for taxation purposes in any country in the world. I actually
So it's not because you're part Mongolian?
No. I don't have any Mongol in me at all, as far as I know. But I do have... I've got... three passports. I've got a diplomatic passport as well. So what I do is I travel on those four passports as and when necessary, and I spend 3 months in each country. So I spend 3 months in Australia, 3 months in New Zealand, 3 months in, you know, South Africa, 3 months in Malta, 3 months in London, 3 months in Ireland, and so forth and so on. The idea is that I'm not a resident for taxation purposes. I'm not a statist person. I don't want to be considered... an Australian, because I don't want a government to own me. I'm a sovereign individual, and I've made that decision to not live anywhere. But I live everywhere and anywhere I want for up to 3 months, or some countries 6 months, where you can stay for 6 months and not break their tourist visa scenarios. So that's what I do.
But there's an exception, of course. You don't go to countries that have... crazy security, and well, basically there's only one country that really has insane what the hell are they doing kind of security. It's called the USSA, and Hawaii has been a destination spot for many people in terms of holidays and whatnot. And you had a very interesting encounter with a T&A person there, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. So what happened was that my wife and I would spend about a quarter of the year in Honolulu. We particularly like Honolulu for, you know, strange reasons. And we went there and we used to regularly go there every quarter of the year. We used to spend in Honolulu. My wife likes it there, so we went there. And what would happen is that in this particular time, the last time we went to Honolulu, we went in there and this big girl who's a TSA person looks at me, and I looked at her, and I smiled at her, and she scowled at me, and she said, why are you coming to Honolulu? It's a beautiful day, by the way, outside on this particular day. And I laughed, and I said, well, we're on vacation. This is where we come for vacation, madam. And she didn't like my laugh. So she said to me, how long are you going to stay? And I said, 3 months. And she said, 3 months? She said, most people come here for 2 weeks. I said, well, she said, what do you do for a job? And I didn't want to tell her I owned a gold and silver based bank. So I said, I'm retired. So she said, retired from what? And I said, well, I've got a business in New Zealand. It's actually an internet-based business. It's not a New Zealand business at all. I have many customers in New Zealand, but I also have many customers from Honolulu. Anyway, she says to me, how long are you here for? I said, 3 months. She said, 3 months? People come here for 2 weeks. I said, well, I'm retired, and I'm here for 3 months, and this is my exit ticket out. And she said, are you a pilot? I went, oh, my God. And I said, as a matter of fact, I am a pilot. Why do you ask? And she said, and she's looking at me strangely, the supervisor's moved over to the desk and he nods his head. They had some kind of hidden conversation going. And she said, scan your fingers, your thumbs, I think, or index fingers, both of them. And she let me through. So the end result was is that I didn't like that. So I don't go back to the US anymore. Since going to Honolulu, by the way, I went to Dallas to do a training course with a debit card company that we used to sell their debit cards. So I went to Dallas to do some training. But when I was there, they got invaded by the feds, literally in the middle of the classroom. It was about 50 feds showed up with various letters on their jackets and dogs and police officers and guns and everything. I mean, it was full on, totally entertaining. I was reminded of that TV show years ago, Dallas. So anyway, I don't go back to the US anymore. I love the place. I love the US.
This is the thing, though. I mean, for the US listeners, I mean, they got to understand that because of these TSA measures, huge amounts of people don't want to go to the US. I'm one of them, okay? I will never go to the US, okay? Namely because I can't, because I've got criminal convictions, because they say, it's real funny. A mate of mine, he went to the US. In fact, I think I might have it on my board here now. Here, look at this. I'll just read this out to you. It's great. Transportation Security Administration Notice of Baggage Inspection. To protect you and your fellow passengers, the Transportation Security Administration, or TSA, is required by law to inspect all checked baggage. As part of this process, some bags are opened and physically inspected. Your bag was among those selected for physical inspection. During the inspection, your bag and its contents may have been searched for prohibited items. At the completion of the inspection, the contents were returned to your bag. If the TSA officer was unable to open your bag for inspection because it was locked, the officer may have been forced to break the locks on your bag. TSA sincerely regrets having to do this because, of course, you know, they wouldn't come and ask you, excuse me, we need to inspect your bag, give me your key. They just go, we need to make sure that we only tell them about this after the fact. You know, and the TSA sincerely regrets having to do this. However, TSA is not liable for damage to your locks resulting from this necessary security precaution. For packing tips and suggestions on how to secure your baggage during your next trip, please visit TSA.gov. We appreciate your understanding and cooperation. If you have questions, comments, or concerns, please feel free to contact us where we will basically never get back to you. And on the other side, of course, being in the United States, it's in Spanish. You know, it's just like, look, you're a slave. We can have complete control over your baggage, and you're liable for the damage that we do, and we're doing it for your safety as a precaution because you're such a dangerous effing individual that, oh, we need to be paranoid. And this is what really F's me off about these scum. Is that they're the most paranoid, retarded filth that have ever been in the league. I mean, where do they get these people? The sex offender watch list? I mean, come on.
Listen, Vinny, I can see you feel very strongly about this. What the people in Iceland did was they divorced themselves from the politicians and said, okay, the politicians made decisions, but we didn't sign off on it. So therefore, the politicians can do what the hell they want, but we're not going to agree to pay those debts that the politicians organised with their banking buddies. So they kicked the politicians out. The point is, we're all sovereign individuals now anyway. We've got the internet, we've got communication. Basically, if anybody from the government, who was it that said the worst words that anybody could ever hear is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help? And the end result is, the idea is to avoid governments altogether and just get them out of your life. It's not hard now to do that, but it takes some change of thinking. I rarely have any contact with government of any description, except when I was in Tel Aviv and as I just said, Dallas. But the guys in Tel Aviv were not obnoxious. They were, you know, good guys. So I didn't have a problem with that. The Dallas guys, once they saw my Australian driver's license, because I fortunately left all my communication equipment in my motel room, and all I had on me was my Australian driver's license. And they pulled that out and said, where's your phone, where's your computer? And they confiscated all the computers and phones and everything. But I didn't have that stuff on me. I just had I had a credit card so I could go and get lunch, and I had Australian driver's license. And I gave it to the guy, and he took my particulars down and told me to leave. And then he looked at me when he said leave. He said, I don't mean leave the building. I went, oh, my God, he's ordering me out of the country. So I just ignored that, went back to my hotel room and quietly organised myself to leave over the next... I had friends to see in Dallas, so I mucked around for a few days in Dallas and then I left. But and by the way, that card company was closed down by the feds, so we then were looking for another card company. We now got one, thank God, out of Ireland, which is great.
Incidentally, speaking of the TSA, I've just got a little 1 minute video to play here. I hope you don't mind. It's a comedy piece done by Saturday Night Live regarding the TSA. Hold on a second, I'll just get this playing for you.
Following paid advertising.
Feeling lonely this holiday season? Looking for a little human interaction? Do you want to feel contact in certain special places?
Then why not go through security at an airport?
TSA agents are standing by to give you a little something extra to feel thankful about this holiday season.
What are you waiting for? I want to check under your testicles.
Spending time with a TSA agent couldn't be easier. Simply book a flight departing from any American airport. When selected for a full body scanner, say no. You'll be pulled aside by a TSA agent, and that's when the fun begins. And you never know who your agent will be.
It could be me.
Or me. Or even me.
But it's probably gonna be us.
TSA, it's our business to touch you first.
See, now that's what I'm talking about. That's the... I mean, the TSA puts the TNA in TSA. You know what I'm saying? It's just... You know, when you live in a society that was sort of based upon some description of Christian ethic, like, you know, you don't feel up children, you don't, check under people's testicles looking for that little pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. It's, you know, this is what happens when a society just goes way, way too far. And it's just straight up paranoia. And what really ticks me off even more than the fact that we have these pedophile scum checking everybody, patting everybody down whenever they're just trying to, you know, do some business or go on a holiday or whatever, as a and the justification for this is obviously an FBI agent leading a CIA patsy onto a plane and then filming him the entire time so that he can, you know, in full view of everybody, instead of going into the bathroom to light up this underwear bomb or whatever... Obviously, that's the main reason why everybody needs to have their testicles checked underneath by TSA agents.
Actually, Vinny, seriously, I can't understand why they go through those levels of checking.
It's prison training. They're trying to turn the planet into a prison where nobody has any dignity. I mean, you remember the first scene in Shawshank Redemption, it's a Freudian slip there, that they got them all naked, throw that delousing stuff on them and spray them with a hose. It's just to completely demoralize and prepare them for having no dignity and train them to be a prisoner. And that's precisely... Okay. And that's precisely what the TSA's job is to coerce the population into feeling like weak prisoners, okay? That's why the TSA agents generally only really pat down small girls and women, because they're less likely to fight back. And, you know, basically, we live in a prison world now, okay? And they're just trying to condition us for the even worse stuff that they've got planned to come down the line. If you think just going through security checkpoints, naked body scanners at an airport are bad, you wait until it's every taxi cab, every train, every bus, every car, or whatever, you know? The sky is the limit when it comes to tyranny.
Okay. Wow. Well, what I've done is that we've spent the last 10 years of slipping out of status control. So I'm a kind of bit innocent now, I guess, because I haven't had much to do with any governments anywhere with any amount of death. So apart from the New Zealand government one time, we had a bit of a run-in with Kiwi Bank. Incidentally, if you're a New Zealander and you bank with Kiwi Bank, they are one of the worst perpetrators of derivative tradings in the country. That's the type of banking that causes derivative meltdowns. And the New Zealand dollar is going down, and the housing industry in New Zealand because of it eventually.
Well, this is why Kiwi Bank is part of the Kiwi Saver scheme. And they call it a scheme for obvious reasons. Basically, they just make once you sign into it, and some people have opted out. I'm one of them because I'm not retarded enough to think that giving all my money and employer contributions and my pay and all of that kind of stuff to a bank that trades in futures and all of that, you know, be that as it may, what they do with all this money is they give it to frickin' finance companies, 19 of which have collapsed in the past few years. So don't, under any circumstances, think that a government savings schemes is there to save you. They're there to rip you off and make you trust them. We'll be right back.
Take my anger to a place that ain't gonna get up in your face. The facts we okay, but the system fails. We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tino Tonga, we don't know the banks. The parliament does so where do you ever stand? They paying their bills off your back with heavy tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV, contraband. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to a planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial
slavery. I love being a commercial slave. It's just freaking fabulous. Now, my very special guest is Graham Kelly from the island state, surrounded by alcoholics, Australia. And we were talking over the... What were we talking about over the break? You had like a story to tell or something.
Oh, I can't remember now. I have so many stories. But one thing about me, I don't... Even though I'm in Australia and I was born in Australia, I'm not an Australian citizen. I'm a tourist. So I don't... I travel permanently across the world on purpose. And the reason why I do that is I don't want to be a resident for taxation purposes, and I don't want to be cannon fodder for any government. So, in other words, if they have a war, then I'll exit. Thank you. Because I'm a tourist.
You're kind of like a citizen of nowhere.
I'm actually stateless. The actual term is stateless.
Do you even have a passport?
I've got three passports, and one of those passports? Diplomatic passport as well. So I have three passports plus the fourth passport, which I rarely use. So I went to a country one time, and I was doing a lot of business in the gold currency business, and the bank complained to the local police. And the police come and visited me, and they said, come to our office. There's a carload of police arrived at my house where I was staying. And I hadn't been doing anything wrong, but we had a high volume of turnover. So they said, come to our office. And I said, get your boss to call me and make a time, and I'll come down to your office. I'm not going in your police car. And they said, they got all very belligerent then and said, yes, you're going to come with us. I said, see this passport? It's a diplomatic passport. I'm a diplomat of a country. and you need to talk to my president, and I'm happy to be included in your investigation. And not only that, you've got to call me Your Excellency, Graham Kelly, and my wife is Lady K. And you get your boss to call me, and we'll make a time. And they all quickly saluted and left. So it's sometimes very handy to have a diplomatic passport. I've only ever used it that way once. So anyway.
How exactly does one get a diplomatic passport?
Well, I will tell you. I'll tell you privately, and you can share that with your listeners some other time.
Well, yeah,
generally it takes money.
Fair enough. I mean, after all, anything that's diplomatic probably costs money, and unfortunately we can't print it out of thin air.
Well, some people can print it out of thin air.
Oh, yeah, but the rest of us can't. Like, if I wanted to make $100, I'd have to go out there, like, doing labouring, for example, for a full day, day and a half, 2 days now, for goodness sake. They'd probably pay me, like, $10.50 an hour or something totally insignificant. And then, on the other hand of it, if a banker wants to make $100, hey, he can just do it right then and there, just snap his fingers, tapping a couple of keys to a computer.
When I had a customer, he ordered $1 million worth of gold. Well, we didn't have $1 million worth of gold in stock, so I had to order it. Now, it took me 6 weeks to get that $1 million worth of gold from my normal supplier. And so what I did was, as and when I got each chunk of the gold, I actually delivered it to his gold in our bank account. And he wasn't worried, but he said to me, why did it take 6 weeks to complete the order? And I said, I just couldn't get enough gold. Even though you paid me, I couldn't get enough gold. It took 6 weeks to get the $1 million worth of gold that I needed to fulfill your order. So that's the state of the play. We don't deliver $1 million worth of paper gold. We deliver digital gold, which is backed with real gold. So these are issues that you got to, you know, that people got to know about. There's a big difference between paper gold and paper silver and digital silver and digital gold. And my website, by the way, is goldnow.st, if people want to go there and get themselves a GoldNow bank account. And they can register for one. Just mention Vinny, and on the order form, and you get it for free. We didn't charge anything. We normally charge $5, but we don't charge anything for people who mention your name, Vinny.
All right, fantastic. Now, we had the problem that I find really is with the banking system and all of that is the vast majority of people don't understand it basically one iota. You know what I'm saying? It's a complex and random creature, and it's so difficult to comprehend, darling, that I can't believe it. And what I find interesting is that in school, for example, nobody under any circumstances winds up learning anything significant about the banking system, right? Okay, like they'll teach you economic theory and whatnot, but they don't actually teach you how to set up or run a bank or do anything like that. And this is the thing about higher education. It's really just higher indoctrination to teach you how to frickin' regurgitate, not think, and not be independent.
Well, most of the banks actually don't, as you've already pointed out, when you go to the bank for a mortgage, you want $200,000, say, for a mortgage, you go there and they'll create that $200,000 out of thin air and then add it to their asset list and then give you the $200,000, more specifically pay the agent $200,000, and you go get the house. But what they've done is that's how they've made their money. They create it out of thin air, whereas we can't do that because we don't create gold or silver out of thin air. So therefore, there's sometimes delays, getting this stuff because we may not have enough in stock, for example, or we may not have enough in stock at the right price. For example, I bought recently quite a lot of silver, but I paid 46 an ounce for it. So then currently it's 35 an ounce for silver, and we sell silver at spot price. So therefore, I'm not going to be selling you silver when you pay me 35 when I paid 46 for it. Do you understand? So that silver is now locked away for next year when it will hit 500 an ounce. Silver, I expect silver to go to 500 an ounce. Not because silver is so valuable, it's because the US dollar is so weak. So and gold will go to eventually go to $5,000. It's currently what, 1500. But you know, when it was 800 an ounce, people were saying, "Oh, 1500, you've got to be joking, you know, it's not going to go there." But have a guess what it has. So the same with silver, you know, I expect it to go to 500 an ounce, but at the moment it's 35 or something like that.
Well, you know, what people don't realise, and I find this is quite commonplace really, is that they don't realise that the reason why everything's getting so expensive is not because they're actually getting expensive, it's because your currency's being devalued.
Yeah, that's a new concept for some. Pretty nice to... It's very unusual. Most of the bankers that operate in the mysticism, they're mystics. And I'm not from a banking background. That's why I can run a bank. If I had a banking background, I would have a problem running a bank because, you know, we had to run it honestly and we couldn't be borrowing $90 to every $10 deposit. For example, we don't have fractional reserve. We actually do have fractional reserve, but it's the other way. We have at least 100% backing the customer's funds. So, in other words, we have a fractional reserve.
Well see, and that's the reason why we can't base the economy on this stuff, because as soon as you give out those big loans, like supply, for example, the reason why you need a fiat currency that's controlled and regulated by the issuer of the currency, whether it be the US Congress or the New Zealand Parliament, rather than private banking institutions like the Federal Reserve fractional reserve system, is so that you can ensure that there is liquidity in the market so that when people do want to make big purchases of that description, they can do it right there just as an economic instrument. Money itself has no value. It's merely the representation of value. Much like, you know, you would eat an apple, but you wouldn't eat a picture of an apple, would you?
Well, no. No, not unless I was forced to, in which case, I still wouldn't eat it.
Well, it's probably loaded with essential links.
Well, actually, I don't buy American apples. I've heard that they're, or oranges, or American fruit of any description, because a lot of it's nuclearized, and I don't want to eat irradiated fruit for the sake of shelf life. It just doesn't make sense. So that's why I don't buy imported fruits from America.
That's why I don't buy Russian wheat, you know.
Well, I don't know whether Russian wheat is irradiated. Who knows? I don't know.
Well, from Chernobyl,
I could. Oh, I see. Yes, I understand.
Yeah, but now, you know, I'm much more picky. You know, that's why I only import the finest Japanese rice.
Well, fair enough. One more thing too. Talking about uranium, do you know that there's an alternative to uranium called thorium? If you Google thorium news, you'll find out that if the Japanese had thorium reactors instead of uranium reactors, they wouldn't have a radiation problem today. And India and China are both building massive LFTR reactors, which are called liquid fluoride thorium reactors, LFTRs. So, and Australia will eventually have to go that way as well. But see, all the yellow cake comes from Australia. They've got a vested interest to make sure people use uranium.
Well,
anyway,
you know,
that's another subject.
And that's why Australian companies have been shipping yellowcake uranium through the nuclear-free New Zealand for the last 20 years. And the fabulous journalists in New Zealand only found that out last year because they're just that retarded. So thank you very much, Graham, for coming on the show. Fire out your website again with your special offer, and then we're done for the day.
Okay, it's just goldnow.st. That's goldnow.st, Sierra Tango. And all the stuff's there. Just go and have a look at it. Add me to your Skype and chat to me.
All right. Thank you very much, Graham. And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in to another fabulous edition of The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Check us out, the archives at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. We'll see you again sometime.